The Fantasy 40s, Part 9, Television, Part 1. With the advent of the television in the late 40s, audio fell victim to video. Listeners became viewers. Whether viewers or critics called the strange new medium sight radio, radio moving pictures, or radio vision, its debut in post-war America was momentous. As Marshall McLuhan would pointedly note, television had, quote, the greatest influence on people of all mutations in this century, end of quote. The transformation of the listener to viewer was slow at first, but once a critical momentum was achieved in numbers of TV sets and devoted fans, from the theater of the mind to the theater of the eye was unstoppable. In 1939, NBC made the first regular broadcast in the New York World's Fair featuring a guest appearance by President Roosevelt. Forecast the New York Times, quote, "The problem with television is that people must sit and keep their eyes glued on a screen. The average American family hasn't time for it. Therefore, the showmen are convinced that for this reason, if for no other, television will never be a serious competitor to broadcasting," end of quote. 1941. Technical standards, which remain largely unchanged today, are set by the National Television Systems Committee. 1945. As the war ends, only 5,000 homes had TV sets, which cost $700 each, which was the price of a Chevrolet car. In 1947, commercial television debuts, with 16 stations this year, soaring to 107 by the end of the decade. A Variety headline, "Wonders of Television is Radio's Frankenstein." Consumer Reports that year offers its own insightful opinion of commercial TV. Quote, "Regrettably, advertising can sink much lower visually than verbally. It's one thing to listen to a comedian imploring you to buy a toothpaste, but to see him looking at you sincerely shining in his eyes, well, one has to be steeled to that." End of quote. Early reviews of the medium and its fare were mixed. Eddie Cantor, quote, "What I've seen on my television set has been the worst kind of junk. It seems that producers of this trivia only have one thing in their minds. It is cheap." End of quote. Jack Benny, quote, "Hold off television, science be damned, long live radio." End of quote. Groucho Marx, quote, "I watch this orgy night after night, bored but nevertheless fascinated by its potentialities. How long can I survive on radio against this new monster?" End of quote. The debut of Radio's Frankenstein had been well planned. As a result of wartime employment, Americans had saved an estimated $100 billion, which television set manufacturers viewed as the financial base of their new empire. Simply put, millions of people, Levittowners, could afford TV sets, and the price of sets conveniently dropped as the size of screens widened from 5 inches to 7 to 10. Indeed, in cities reached by the first television programs, which were largely adaptation of successful radio shows featuring the same stars, shtick, and sponsors, radio received less than 15% of the evening audience. The choice to listen or watch was really Hobson's choice. At the end of the 40s, advertisers were spending $200 million on television, largely to sell cigarettes. Cigarettes made broadcasting profitable. The medium superstars were a red-headed, freckled-faced puppet named Howdy Doody and a failed radio comedian called Milton Berle. And in many ways, they were not all that different. But the premiere of I Love Lucy in 1951, 17 million Americans had bought television sets, and movie theaters across the country had lost up to 40% of their audience. Milton Berle's Texaco Star Theater, NBC premiere June 8, 1948. Milton Berle had never had a successful radio series. In the decade before he memorably debuted on TV, he appeared on such forgettable shows as Gillette's Community Sing, If You've Heard This One, and a quiz show, Kiss and Make Up. But on Tuesday night, June 8, 1948, Berle's screwball comedy style propelled him to the kind of national fame that won him the accolade Mr. Television. It is said that he sold more TV sets than an advertising campaign ever devised. People bought tubes just to see this much-touted annex. His unscripted quips to a TV audience and his stable of zany stooges. The joke of the day was by comic Joey Lewis. Quote, "Berle is responsible for this television sets being sold more than anyone else. I sold mine, my father sold his," end of quote. Within weeks of his debut, Milton Berlinger, born July the 12th, 1908, in a New York tenement to a shopkeeper father and a department store detective mother, was the most popular entertainer in the nation. His broadcast, October the 19th, 1948, measured in a Hooper rating, captured 92% of the viewing audience, though to be the highest rating ever achieved by any radio or television program. Time reported that with the show not yet a year old, Burl's audience in the 24 cities that see him live or on the kinescopic film 2 weeks later is reliably estimated at 4.452 million. Observed Newsweek the same month, this radio stage screen comic has become not only the country's top salaried nightclub entertainer, but the first and biggest star in the newest and most difficult of all entertainment mediums, television. Week after week, Burl scored an astonishing 80% on the Hooper rating, meaning 80% of TV sets tuned in to anything in that hour were getting him. Expressed another way, no other entertainer in history has ever been seen simultaneously by so many people. Such was the power and the glory bestowed by television. Nightclubs and restaurants, traditionally closed on Monday nights, now closed on Tuesday because doing business opposite Uncle Milty ceased to pay. For the next few years, Tuesday nights belonged to Milton Berle. And Wednesday morning, people around the country laughed again as they related the zany skits, the corny jokes to those less fortunate who did not yet own TV sets. So essential was it to see the most talked about show in the nation, families scraped together funds to purchase their first set just to watch the undisputed number one performer in the U.S. TV. As Time was quick to label him, quote, he was the Henry Ford of television, end of quote. People magazine later said, quote, the one who transformed the rich man's toy into an electronic renaissance, end of quote. It's no exaggeration to say that Milton Berle became the nation's second uncle after Sam. Audiences adored his impressive roster of guest stars, his unconcealed devotion to his mother Sandra, his vaudeville slapstick routines, and the surprise get-ups he'd wear to open each week's show. He was repeatedly hit in the face with cream pies and squirted with soda water from a seltzer bottle. His clothes were torn apart, his wig was pulled off, and he shamelessly resorted to old-time vaudeville stunts like cutting off the tie of a spectator and sticking his finger in another performer's mouth. He had a penchant for tasteless drag, followed by costumes of clowns, monsters, Superman, Cleopatra, Santa Claus, Sherlock Holmes, the Easter Bunny, Father Time, Charlie Chaplin, and even fellow TV star Howdy Doody. His impersonation of the fruit-laden Karma Miranda always drew huge laughs. He blatantly announced that his jokes were stolen from the top comics in the business, as often they were. Entertainment writers realized from the start they were witnessing an unprecedented event, a phenomena of massive proportions. When the history of the early days of commercial television is eventually written, several chapters will no doubt be devoted to the strange art of Milton Berle. Uncle Milty so dominated the airwaves in frantic slapstick humor, corny jokes, and crazy costumes in the tradition of the vaudeville stage that the era of his hegemony from the late 40s to the mid-50s had been dubbed the medium's vaudo era, a combination of old-time vaudeville and newfangled medium of video. Extraordinary success of the Texaco Star Theater prompted networks to introduce additional comedy and variety programs. With something like the Alaskan Gold Rush, wrote one TV critic, every comic who ever induced the Vegas snicker from an audience was rushed by his eager agent to attend the top-level meeting with network executives. Rival CBS in 1948 offered viewers Ed Sullivan's Toast of the Town. Comedians Sid Caesar and Imogene Coca were featured on the Admiral Broadway Review, 1949, a forerunner of their popular show, Your Show of Shows, in 1950. Comedy began to dominate nighttime scheduling by 1950, the year Jackie Gleason starred in the DuPont's Cavalcade of Stars. Groucho Marx appeared in You Bet Your Life. The realization that TV was now America's favorite home entertainment caused radio comedians to rush in the television. Both Bob Hope and Jack Benny had their first specials in 1950. That year, TV comedy reviews featured Danny Thomas, Jimmy Durante, Dean Martin, Jerry Lewis, Abbott and Costello, and Phil Silvers. If it wasn't for Burl, Jackie Gleason later admitted, a lot of us wouldn't have gotten the break either. He became Mr. Television. Those network guys began saying, "You gotta get comics." Mr. Television's last regular telecast was June 1956. By that time, viewers' favorite form of programming was the situation comedy. So we'll pick up there with the first of those type of shows next time. So the source for this is Panini's Parade of Fads, Follies, and Manias, The Origins of Our Most Cherished Obsessions by Charles Panini. So I hope you enjoyed that. And as always, don't forget to come by the website, sumahistorica.com or historyaccordingtobob.com, and ask a question, our merchandise, and if you like what we're doing, please feel free to support us. Thank you very much.